evening, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Breakfast Bites. A little bit different show this week. No former player, but we have on our good friend, my golf buddy, the Orlando Sentinels rider, Edgar Thompson. How you doing, Edgar?
I'm sure I am your golf buddy. I think you've taken me for like $100 the last two times, 75 the last two times we've played. Even the docket.
Yeah, I was down like $82, so it's good to get back to even.
And I get a lot of strokes for the listeners out there.
More than I like to give away, but you know, someone else that's trying to get back to the even is Billy Napier, who's 21-22 as the University of Florida's head coach, which is, I think, the worst record since World War II. Edgar, let's just go back a little bit to the Texas game. Did that surprise you? What were your thoughts on just not the environment, but how the Gators played? It's kind of, Billy said, this is kind of the team he thought he had coming into the season week one. What did you see that changed, or were you surprised by the effort and the result?
I picked him to win, but only to kind of keep things interesting. I wasn't so sure. I did think the swamp was going to play a role with Arch Manning, as it has with the quarterbacks. Are too long to list, but there have been some real nightmare performances by pretty talented guys. I think Cam Ward might be the only guy who's really come in here and just dominated an entire game. Bryce Young played really well the first half, that proved enough in that game, 2021. Otherwise, people fall apart. But the Gators had a lot to do with that. I mean, the opening drive, they just laid it down physically. Dallas Wilson, I mean, running over, carrying two guys, knocking a guy's helmet off, and we'll get to him, I'm sure, in a minute. I mean, what a game changer he was. But just the physicality up front, and then they went to the defensive side and brought it from that on that side too. So this team plays hard for this coaching staff, and Billy Napier's really the one constant on the staff through all these years, because they've always kind of fought. They've never really – I mean, there are a couple of games where they just kind of no-showed and laid down. Kentucky maybe in 2023. I mean, the Las Vegas Bowl is not really a fair barometer because of opt-outs, but that was a bad one. But there haven't been a lot of games where it's like this team just didn't bring it today. And they brought it, and Texas I don't think is as good as we thought it was. And the Longhorn lines, particularly the O-line, is pretty shaky. And the Gators, man, took advantage, but it's a whole nother deal this week on the road where they don't win and playing a team with better lines.
Yeah, I don't think Napier's beaten a team that finished the year the 500 record on the road.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. No ranked. I mean, 0-13 if you include the Las Vegas Bowl. But in fairness, I'd just say regular season 0-12. So they need this to be lucky 13 and win one finally.
Well, the speculation for the last several weeks starts with USF. The questions last year, you know, is Billy Napier the guy for the job? He wins his last four games, comes in this year, lays an egg all throughout September. Hmm. There was an article, I believe you caught it right before the show. Brett McMurphy had a quote that said from a source that there's still a divided camp at Florida. The administration would love for Billy to win and be successful, but the guys that pay the bills are saying he's not the guy. I mean, and that's obvious. 21-22, his resume speaks for itself. Is there anything you're hearing in Gainesville along those lines that, you know, something maybe different between the fans and the administration?
Well, the sense I get from fans, I don't talk to many of the big money people. There's only a small cadre of them, and they keep it pretty tight circle. But I think fans have made it pretty clear. The general fan, they think they've seen enough, including yourself. And then they're media people. I won't name the person, but before last year's SEC media days, not this past one, but 2 years ago, media persons like, I've seen enough. And I kind of agree on some level, even back then, even after the first year, I had some serious questions. However, the end of last season, you start thinking, maybe they're figuring out on defense. I think Ron Roberts is I won't say underrated, but maybe underappreciated. I think he's a pretty good coach. You go look at his history, even as a head coach at lower levels, he was good. I mean, he was pretty good at Delta State and Southeastern Louisiana. I know that's not this level, but he's a good football coach, and he's had a track record on the defensive side. I mean, forget Auburn's first year. I mean, that didn't work out for anybody, right? So I think he's pretty good. And we're seeing the defense, and then you got Lagway suddenly coming on, and you're like, and we're seeing Ball, we think, can be elite, which I think he is. And then you get a Dallas Wilson, Vernell Brown tag team coming in, and those guys are showing what they're about. Suddenly you're like thinking, but that USF game's inexcusable. I mean, someone even used that word with me who is involved in a lot of the, could be ultimately involved in the decision. That was the one that's going to really hang like a stain for Billy. You lose at LSU when Lagway falls apart amid a crisis of confidence and injuries, let's say still. He's still kind of rusty. And then Miami, you gave a pretty decent game for a bit, and Miami might be the best team in the country. You're kind of like 2-2 or 3-2 right now, and you're going, yeah, that's not bad. But USF, man, it's like, what the heck happened there? And that was one that's going to haunt him. However, I do think he's being given a chance. I threw this out to someone. What if he wins 5 of 7? Suddenly you're 7-5. That would mean DJ's playing a lot better. It would mean Wilson's probably emerging as a star. Vernell Brown continues this trajectory. You got Baugh, young interior defensive lineman. We talked to Makai Barrow tonight. He's very impressive. These young guys are pretty good. Miles Graham's a complete stud, best linebacker I've seen her since Jared Davis. You got some pieces, and you're like, we don't really want to lose that at 7-5 if you lose two games close along the way. But we're going to be talking again the same thing next year is my fear. Yep. And Billy would have to really just radically change his philosophy, bring someone in, hand it all over, the entire offensive scheme. And that's what he'd have to do to save his job at 7-5, but I still don't know that'll be enough.
Now, I agree with you, Edgar. And real quick, before we jump into the next segment, just a reminder, guys, we are part of the Stadium and Gale Network and brought to you by our partner, Norris and Norris PA, out of Lake City, Florida. Norris and Norris PA is a preeminent law firm serving North Florida since 1985. You can give Guy a call at 386-752-7240 if you need any assistance with business law matters, real estate, wills, or trust and estate planning. And again, we've got Edgar Thompson at the Orlando Sentinel on, and Dev, I'll kick it over to you.
Yeah, no, I want to hear Dev and Will. Will's always on a rant. I got to hear
I know. These guys. Well, I mean, Edgar, in fairness to me, there's been a lot of things that we can rant about recently, you know?
Right.
No, I love a good rant.
Right. I do too. Sometimes it's necessary to get out there on Twitter and vent to the masses.
Yeah, what do you got, Devin?
Hey, girl, it was nice meeting you on Saturday, man. It was good to put a face with the name. You know, the coaching staff gets a little bit of goodwill on Saturday. They go out and turn in their best performance of the season, the best performance that we've seen in the Swamp since the Ole Miss game last year. What did you make of 30 minutes after the game, the general manager for Billy's staff, Jacob LaFrance, jumping on Twitter and gloating a little bit as the team improved their record to 2-3 with his Sunbelt Billy and the Boys tweet that made its rounds on Gator Twitter and fired up the guys like Will Norris.
Well, yeah, and Brett McMurphy, as we were talking about the article and on 3, you know, Brett kind of came over, longtime ESPN guy, went to Stadium or whatever, and now he's at on 3, and they're building up a pretty good cadre of guys over there with him, Chris Lowe, and some others nationally. But, yeah, I mean, I missed it, but then I caught it the next day, and I'm thinking, you know, I think Andy Staples might have tweeted about it. Mm-hmm. It's a little premature. I wouldn't start – it's like, you know, you birdie the first hole, right? And you're, like, just pumping fists and –
I might say they've had a couple double bogeys and they finally got a birdie back on about hole number 8 or 9.
Exactly. Yeah,
birdie at any point. It's good at any point for me, but we're talking about guys that should be on the PGA.
No, it's like you make a triple, a double, a triple, then you make a birdie and you're like, yeah, man, Like, and then you make another double. I mean, it's like you don't start doing that after just one moment. And it was a big win. It was a must win. It was, without it, Billy's like literally one more loss, maybe this weekend away. I think he'll make it through the bye week now, at the very least. I think he'll make it to Georgia, and then we'll see if they were to lose this weekend, is what I'm going with. And then if they lose that 3-5, it's like maybe you'll like decide then. But he's got to win two of the next three to be coaching at Kentucky and Ole Miss for sure.
Right. And you've been doing this a long time. This is year four. He's 21-22 in his tenure. He's never been more than two games over 500 in the mm-hmm. 4 years that he's been here. It seems impossible. Brett McMurphy, the phrase that he used was that it's going to require a magical run for Billy to keep his job. Mm-hmm. With the schedule that we have left, do you see that magical run in him? I mean, still four of the top 12 teams in the country on the schedule. FSU still kind of hanging on to a top 25 ranking. Do you think a magical run like what we saw the last four games of last season is in the cards in 2025?
Well, in the reality, everyone's kind of poked holes in that four-game run in that LSU was dysfunctional. Ole Miss really just blew a lot of opportunities. Dart fell apart unlike any time he had all season right at the end. FSU was terrible. And Tulane, they're up 6-0 at the half, where the Gasparilla Bowl PA guy was like almost angry. He's like 6-0, lowest scoring game in 18 years. I mean, he was like mad. I mean, we were all mad. It was horrible football. So the point is, it wasn't like some scintillating run through murderer's row there, but it was, they did what they needed to do and created some momentum for sure. And then DJ's Alagwe's injuries kind of undercut some of that momentum. But a magical run. I mean, of course I'm not betting on it. I mean, you'd have to be a fool to bet on it that it's going to happen. I do think DJ is a pretty special guy, but he's also seems to be banged up a little bit again. That's going to limit his mobility against a team that's extremely effective pressuring the passer and creating, negative plays. So that's going to be tough. But Dallas Wilson, man, whoo, what a transcendent kid that he looks like. And Vernell Brown's special. So in Baugh, I mean, if you can get that line, get that run game greased up. I mean, 107 on 27 carries is workmanlike and then some. That's some old school running the ball. So they got a shot, this week, but for sure. And A&M 16-10 with Auburn. Auburn sacked Reed four times. The Gators are going to have to kind of do that same kind of thing to stay in a game. But it doesn't get any easier. You got Georgia. You got at Ole Miss. I mean, Tennessee looks like it's, pretty damn effective on offense as always with Aguilar and Heupel calling in the up-tempo. So it's a huge order, tall order. But, I mean, you just got to – let's see. They lose this weekend, and all the noise is back at a fever pitch.
Yeah, so it seems like Will Jackson and I have kind of fallen on the once we get to five losses, that's about when we think that the plug gets pulled on the experiment. Speaking of Lagwe,
we're in an experiment mode still here. No, I'm kidding.
We're saying we're still in experiment mode. Speaking of Lagwe, and we saw he got a little bit banged up in the Texas game. I know that you got a chance to talk to him this week. What did you hear from DJ this week, and what can we expect to read in your story?
Well, surprisingly, he wasn't going to – he spoke the other night. No one asked him at A&M, and so afterwards I was like, hey, we're getting him what day this week? Hopefully Wednesday's a little late in the week. Like, I'd be writing that right now. And kind of like tomorrow the window starts closing on people's interest in reading stuff as the week gets later. And they're like, oh, he's not speaking. I said, what? So next thing I know, Billy's hooking me up with DJ after practice Monday night. I mean, I'm not going to argue. So I spoke with him. He's an impressive kid. I mean, he came in and spoke after the LSU game, didn't shy away from that. Miami, same thing. No one's pushing him to the podium or the dais. He's coming. He understands it. He gets it. I realize he's making a lot of money and all that. People will say, well, of course, he's getting paid. Yeah. He doesn't have to do that. There are plenty of NFL guys that hide in the shower after what performances like those two. So to his credit, and we spoke the other night, and he's pumped, man. He's going back to Willis, Texas, or going back, excuse me, to Texas A&M, which is 75 minutes northwest of Willis, where he grew up. It's a Aggie footprint, Aggie town. His mother, I spoke with today, Nikki, she's on the board of trustees at the school, with the school, and the president of it is a big Aggie. And he's like, I hope DJ has the best game of his life and still loses by one, you know, 1 point. And
that would be a very Billy Napier way for things to happen.
Well, no, and I'm like, you really want the kid's heartbroken like that? I mean, that's pretty brutal. But he's going to have a huge contingent at the game. The mom has no, can't, she has four tickets. She's like, I couldn't, turning down Pee Wee kids play for a team called the Gators. Three kids, she had to say, I don't have tickets for you. Like, they're like, please, please, let me go see DJ. And they even play for a team called the Gators. So it's a cool story. It's a great opportunity for the kid. They tried to flip him at the NANM, Elko and that group when they came in. He was set on the Gators. He's like, look, I'm the kind of person who, when I commit to something, I'm committed. And he committed to Florida December in 2022. I mean, a full year before his commitment was even due. He's a Napier guy. He thinks Napier conducts himself in the way that people should. You know, day in and day out, even keeled, steady Eddie, he called him. He said he loves ball like me. And he said he behaves and carries himself in a way you kind of aspire to become a man. I mean, Billy carries himself incredibly well. It's just on Saturday, man, when it doesn't click for whatever reason, whether he's trying to do too much, whether he gets overwhelmed in the moment, doesn't think clearly, whether the minute he's off script, he doesn't have a feel for it. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's all of the above, but he really put himself in a corner by not hiring someone to take that load of play calling and offensive schematics off his plate. And now it's all on him, and he's probably going to go down with the ship as a result of it.
Yeah, and this is this will be the fourth time Florida goes to College Station to play Texas A&M, 2-1. They won one in 2012, one in 2022, lost in 2020.
I was there for the two wins.
I was there in 2012 for Johnny Manziel's.
Oh, were you?
You, yep. A 14-year-old Devin was there with his family in the upper deck of the pre-renovation Kyle Field.
Yeah. No, yeah. I remember. So I was at that game. It was my first one with the Sentinel. And it's funny, Mark Long and I, who I do a podcast with, AP writer, were talking today. And he made some offhand comment. Now, he said he didn't. I maybe took it the wrong way. I think he did say it, that this defense is even better than any that Boom had. And I said, well, hold on. 2012's defense, man, was really good. And I was recalling that game, and I said, they had first-year freshmen. I said, Morrison, Bullard, I remember from that game, is Stinkley. And Fowler, Morrison had six tackles. Bullard had four, including one half for loss in a hurry. I mean, these kids already at 18 years old were impacting the game, and Fowler himself too. So that was an impressive defense that year. But you know what happened that game? Manziel was really looking great. And then for some reason, Sumlin kind of reined him in the second half. And you were kind of like, that kid was spectacular. I'd never even heard of him. I had no idea who that guy was.
I think Lorente McCray had a chase down sack.
Yeah,
they did.
On the sideline. Yeah, it was highlight reel.
Lorente McCray played Jags special teams for a number of years.
A decade. Yep.
He's from Denali, just down the road. He was an interesting kid. But, yeah, that defense was elite. But then in 2022, it was an Anthony Richardson show against a flu-ridden team with Jimbo Fisher, and the whole wheels were coming off that program. But Anthony, that day was one of the days where you were like, this kid should be great, like, all the time. He had a 60-yard TD in that game that was just like, there's nobody on this team right now and do that.
Yeah, I can't run that. Yeah. And then I think the 2020 team was the best of any of the three teams that we saw at the station, and they're the ones that lose.
Yeah. Malik Davis fumble, killed him.
Yeah.
That was the one that sent Dan Mullen off the rails because it was like, we're packing the swamp next time.
Yeah. Well, so Edgar, speaking of going off the rails, you just mentioned that you've been covering the team since 2012.
2002, so, actually, five.
2002. Seasons. Okay, five so 2012,
and then I was gone back in 12.
So okay, so you have you. Okay, so you've covered the Gators at their height with Urban Meyer, and then you've seen quite a few coaches who have it go off the rails.
Oh, yeah.
From a media member's perspective, it's obviously much different than a player or former player or everything. What is it that has allowed Billy Napier to prevent things from going off the rails, even though it seems like the losses keep piling up and this train is like, it's so close to the end, but he just will not let it go off the rails?
I went and did a story when Billy was hired. I went up to Chatsworth in Northwestern, Georgia. It's like, I don't know, 90 minutes northwest of Atlanta. It's like Dalton is like the capital of the carpet capital or whatever. It's like just like 12 miles due west. And it's like a working blue collar, you know, textile workers. You're either like a farmer or you do that. It's like rural blue collar, you know, Baptist belt part of the country, right? Mm-hmm. Is this raised like that by a football coach who was clearly revered, who died young, 2015 of ALS at age 60. And I think he was just raised the right way in the right environment just to be able to just have perspective. And he grew up around football, and I think he just somehow maintains perspective on it and just realizes it just, you just got to keep working at it. You just got to keep working at it. And I'm sure he's just beside himself. It's not work. His plan's not working. I'm sure it's, you know, crushing him inside, but you just don't really see it very often. But he stays the course and gets up and goes to work each day and keeps his teams positive and motivated and progressing. And Makai Barreau talked tonight, the young 19-year-old defensive nose guard. I guess he plays nose mainly. And he's like, look, man, every day you just wake up and improve. You lose. You learn from it. We're sitting around, you know, sulking about that. What good is that going to do? You got to get up and get better. Every day you wake up and you got to improve. And I think Billy, that's just his way he works in life. I mean, what did he say 1 year early on? He's like, a lot of people, just life happened to them. I thought it was a great line because I'm a master of letting life happen to me. And most people are. And he's just not that kind of person. I mean, he's built like, he's got some stoicism, man, and some belief and faith. So I credit the guy. I like the guy. He's a respectful person. He's a gentleman. I actually think he's more interesting if you actually listen to him and don't listen to his tone, which is kind of monotone and not like dynamic. He has a lot of well-conceived ideas and thoughts and messages. But, you know, when you're 21 and 22, it doesn't land and nobody wants to hear you anyway. Right. I mean, but I like the guy. If he makes it somehow and survives, I won't complain. But if they roll the lame train into town, I'll be front and center and enjoy the hell out of that, too.
Yeah, it is interesting. He constantly is talking about his upbringing and self-evaluating and all of these sort of things. But I mean, you've asked him directly. Mark Long has asked him directly several times, especially this year, but you've asked him previous years too about the play calling and the offensive system and everything. I almost have a theory that he has passed off some of the play calling, but he is protecting his sort of younger offensive staff people. Do you think that there's any possibility that that's going on, or is he really just like the one doing it all on game days?
Well, we do a thing on our podcast called Unsubstantiated Rumor.
Okay.
And mine last week, I believe it was, someone told me that after the Miami game, there was some real consternation among the staff. Like, this is even like, I don't say anger, but intense frustration, right? Angst. And a couple guys went to him and said, let's think about it. And he's just like, we're good, kind of thing, his attitude. He wants to play. He wants to just be a physical football team that just out-executes you. And it's just like, man, you winning one-on-ones all the time, man, and 11-on-11, like he likes to talk a lot, and you're Jake Slaughter, 11-on-11. It's just like, I mean, that's great. But, you know, you can also lose a couple of those matchups if you have somebody out in space who's elite getting the football, like a Vernell Brown or a Dallas Wilson, or you get, you know, spring ball even if something breaks down or whatever. I mean, look, the play he scored on, Ba, the line collapsed. He just made a jump cut because he's an incredibly agile guy at his size. It's an incredible jump. That's a three-yard loss for a lot of backs. Yeah. So that wasn't even a great play. I mean, right? So right. You need guys to make plays. You're not getting 11-on-11. You're not executing perfectly a lot of the time. So it's like for him, that to be his philosophy is kind of like a misguided one at this day and age where it's more about explosive plays, chunk plays, you know, and don't put so much on perfect execution, stringing together a 13-play, 84-yard drive. That was a brilliant drive, penalty-free. But how many of those have they had where there isn't a penalty? There isn't a breakdown. It's hard to do.
Yeah, one of the things we've been, I wouldn't call it harping on because it happens every single week. So we're really just pointing it out when it happens, is that he coaches everything on the margins. And I don't know what it is about him, but it's like watching every single game is like you are watching an NFL like late playoff game where it's two, you know, very equally matched teams and the score is going to be 27-21 and somebody wins on a late field goal or a late touchdown or something like that. But it doesn't equate for the fact that there's major parity. You know, the talent level difference between the us's of the world and the USF's of the world. It seems like every time he's bringing them there. And then if you get a close win, he's kind of like, well, you know, we executed really well. We should have executed better here. And it just almost seems like he doesn't understand like how college football is. And you can look at the other teams in the SEC and they are just dominating these teams that they're so much more talented than. And I think I had mentioned the only dominant game I think we've ever had is the Eastern Washington game back in year one.
Jalen Kepner.
Yeah.
Ron Zook had a similar style of coaching.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Muschamp had a similar style of coaching, and you know how those ended. So he's kind of cut from that cloth a bit, and it can be an effective cloth if you're Nick Saban circa 2009. It worked great then. Yeah. Maybe Kirby even like 2021. You know what those teams had in common? I think each defense allowed like 8 or 9 points a game. I mean, those were like two of the best college defenses ever of the modern era. So they don't have that here. Defense is good. It's not like, as we said, it's not 2012 even, I don't think.
No, but, I mean, that 2012 defense wouldn't have let Texas score after the Hayden Hansen fumble because they had to do that all the time.
And even Nick Saban ended up hiring Lane Kiffin and Steve Sarkisian.
Well, what I'm saying, but he changed.
Right.
Yeah. I remember I was at SEC Media Days and he was complaining about up-tempo and Gus Malzahn and it's – you know, it was all about up-tempo, and they're both up there basically dueling interviews, and one's promoting it, and the other's, you know, throwing cold water on it, questioning it, injury concerns and all this. What's he do? Gets Lane Kiffin in there, goes up-tempo a few years later, and starts putting great offenses out. So, and winning more national championships that way. You adapt. Billy is not adapting probably as he should in certain respects. I don't know the ins and outs of all of it. I do. So I was on Shane's show today, Shane Matthews, and we were going back and forth kind of arguing because I was just talking about the plays at the end of the game. Like you're getting in these third and whatevers and you're running Baugh to the right. That's a terrible call, I thought. He lost 3 yards. I mean, fake it to Baugh. Throw that little tight end out in the flat or get someone in space a little bit. He was hitting those crossers like all day long, pinpoint. Throw another one of those. Get Dallas Wilson, get the ball in the air to him or just throw him a screen pass and let him run over 3 guys. I mean, I don't know what that call was, but he does stuff like that. And Shane's like questioning that all those calls were fine. But that's kind of Shane's game. He doesn't question the calls much, but I think that Billy did get too conservative. I mean, the one where they settled for the field goal and it was 3rd-and-9, everyone was uproar because they ran Baugh. But you get, why'd you get to third and nine in the first place there? It's like you hit a 60-yard play that was like the most spectacular of the day, arguably, along with the Dallas Wilson 55-yarder. Those two plays are like highlight reel for, you know, for the season. And yeah. Peter, you just squander it. It's like he just does that a little too often for my liking and for fans particularly. And I know Wells for sure, but and Jackson's and everybody on here.
I mean, listen, people will come after me on Twitter and say that I hate Billy because I don't like that he wears black on game days, whatever. But I've also
defended him black behind Jesse.
I know. And I've got my team issued G Unit shirt on tonight. That's my special podcasting shirt for Billy.
Devin's keeping it positive with Hoops national title.
There you go.
Whereas we got, I guess DJ's positive. We got Lane Train beside him. So,
but I've my 4-1 Jacksonville Jaguars.
But what I was saying is I've defended Billy several times, over things that are defensible. Like I think sometimes, you know, not paying some players and allowing them go like Jack Pyburn, TJ Cersei, things like that. Like I figured the defense would be fine. And so you see people freaking out about them, certain things like that with roster building. I think it's all been great, but it's really just what drives the frustration. Cause whenever I'm watching the games, you know, it doesn't take a football savant to look at the way Florida has stacked up against LSU and against Miami and against Texas to know that we have a top 10 roster. And we have a 5-star quarterback and we have a freakish man child over now playing wide receiver. And on the other side, we have Vernell Brown, who before Dallas Wilson looked like the best freshman wide receiver we'd had since Percy Harvin. And so it's like, how can we not put this together on game days to not even, you know, we're not even asking him to win a national championship at this point. We just want to at least be 500 and, you know, make a 12 seed as a playoff contender. You've got me going on a rant. I think that's
no, it's all good.
But that's really what it's all about, and that's why it just gets so frustrating every week because it's like watching the same movie over and over again, and it's like Einstein's definition of insanity. It's like he's doing the same exact thing. Maybe it'll work differently this time. Maybe if I double, triple down on the process, that things will be better. And it just hasn't worked out like that.
It's hard to be consistent doing it the way he does it. Bottom line, and that's been the problem. They're inconsistent.
Yeah.
My comp for Vernell Brown coming into the year was Antonio Callaway 15, certainly not the 16 version. Mm-hmm. And I think he's kind of maybe that with the punt returning and the big play. Because Antonio Callaway's freshman year was pretty damn good. But yeah, he's something. Boz something. Yeah. I think I may honestly be in love with Miles Graham. I hope he doesn't watch your pod. He might.
Oh, he's unbelievable.
Love him. I mean, just as a kid. He's just so – I mean, 19 years old, he's incredible in front of the mic. He's awesome. You guys watch his interviews, he's incredible.
Yeah, and that's why I think that the defense will not quit. I think he has Gator blood through and through. He's a legacy Gainesville guy, and he's just going to will this defense to continue playing because that's all he knows.
He smacks guys. Every time there's a big hit, you see those dreadlocks in the middle of it somewhere. I mean, he's just – he's relentless,
man. He's not quite as thick as Brandon Spikes, but he kind of – the way he hits reminds me of it.
Yeah, he doesn't have that size, but, man, he brings it. Yeah, he's a wonderful player. They got a lot of them. He's put together a nice roster. Billy does know and works his ass off on building rosters. I mean, 650 cut-ups a year. I mean, he is relentless with that. Here's the issue. Billy's their best recruiter in many respects, probably. Right?
Yeah.
He's like wants to run the offense. Plus, I'm sure he's running NIL for him, even if there's somebody else who's supposed to do it. And he's making this decision and that. And he's just, you can't do it all. And this is what happens when you try to do it all. It's not, you know, some of it's not going to be, a lot of it might be pretty good, but some of it's going to like suffer because you're trying to do everything.
Yeah. Well, I think Billy may still be involved in an ongoing lawsuit related to his involvement in NIL. So I don't think he can confirm nor deny how involved he is in those decisions. But it is crazy, too, because, I mean, you're talking about all the cut-ups and stuff. And he seems to rely on his staff so much. Like, we brought up the stupid tweet from LaFrance. But I think largely the guy does a pretty good job. He's found some of these dudes like Gums and even this Kofi Asare guy who is like gone from Massachusetts, I think, was where he was playing to like decent SEC contributor. Brian Taylor just had an unbelievable game, and he looks like what Georgia usually has on the defensive line as their subs, and he's coming in and just running people over, getting sacks like he's Earl Everett with his helmet off against Texas. But he won't do it when it comes to game days. He won't pass things off.
Yeah,
I can't deal with
that. It drives everyone crazy, and I'm sure, well, included on the list are people that expected, possibly even people in with some juice over in the building, that Billy would not be calling plays this year, and he continued to do it to their dismay.
Well, Edgar, I know somebody that has given up the reins of play calling, and I'll let Hunter, who joined us.
Yeah, let Hunter tell us.
Hey, Edgar, how we doing? Sorry for hopping on late here. Usually what they do is they pull me in out of the bullpen whenever they need the tough questions asked, Edgar. So let's cut right to it, all right? If we're talking all about the reasons why Billy may not end up being the guy long term, if he's not, can we get a few names from you who you would look at if you're the guy making the call?
Well, I think if you don't offer Lane Kiffin, you're tone deaf, honestly. And make him turn it down. I get it. There might be some things, questionable character, let's say, over his life. Well, I have questionable character over my life. And, you know, you make decisions and you try to grow from them. A bad decision, you try to grow from them. Seems like Lane has kind of turned the page. He's a 50-year-old man now. He's a better, more involved parent than he's ever been. The guy thinks at least 4 years without drinking alcohol, which is a game changer, I can say from personal experience. And he seems, he's a savant. The guy was an NFL coach at 31 years old. I mean, that was maybe some Monty Kiffin coattail stuff a little, but it was because he was a boy wonder, you know, and a lot of these things haven't worked out over the years because of his personality and his impetuousness. But I do think that he is a kind of a different guy now, and he's done a great job at Ole Miss, and I think that's your first crack. If you don't get him, I think there's only maybe a couple other guys who could really excite the fan base, because you have to excite the fan base and the donor base when you're doing a billion-dollar renovation of the Swamp. You have a $20 million nut for rev share every year, and you're trying to raise money with the collective for NIL. On top of that, you got to really excite people to write checks, buy tickets, buy everything. And I think Kirk Cignetti from Indiana is a guy that could honestly do that. I mean, people that know football would be excited. You talk to people, there's a belief that his teams execute better than like any teams in the country. They just are execution machines. This guy can coach. 65 next season, okay. You get 6-7 years out of that guy, you're getting more than you've gotten out of anyone.
Exactly.
Urban, the rails by then, year five, Mullen and Muschamp didn't make it through year four. Billy might not. And Zook and Muschamp didn't make it, or McElwain didn't make it through 3 years. So what's this window? We got to have a guy for 10, 12 years in your mind. You got to get this thing back and going in a right direction. And then I think Cignetti might be able to do that. I mean, people have talked about Marcus Freeman, defensive-minded, super impressive. He probably recruit his ass off here, and he's incredible in front of the camera, probably a great players, coach, culture guy. I don't know that I love that, but he'd be good. And the other name you keep hearing is Drinkwitz. Not really that sold on that one. And if that's what you end up with, I'm kind of like, why'd you ever get rid of Dan Mullen then? I mean, it's like, I think Dan Mullen's probably a better offensive coach and better coach than that guy anyway.
Mullen's 5-0 this year. First time since like 1984 for the running Rebs.
And I get why they got rid of Dan, and Dan was kind of checked out. I understand it, even though there was maybe ways you could have made it work, maybe. I just don't know what I want to behind the scenes enough. But he was pretty elite, man, on Saturdays, but he wasn't so much on other days. But Drinkwitz probably is a better organizer and better – at a lot of that stuff. He also has benefited greatly from Missouri's NIL laws at certain points. And I don't know. I think it should be Kiffin, and then Cignetti, Freeman, and then Drinkwitz, I guess, would be your fallback, which doesn't excite me a whole lot. I don't know what other names you guys have in the mix.
Edgar, I agree with almost everything that you said about Lane Kiffin being the top of the list. This podcast has officially endorsed Lane Kiffin to be the next coach of the Gators. The one thing that I disagreed with was that they tell Lane to tone it down. I think let Lane be.
Well, no, I don't think they should come to tone it down. I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying I think they have issues with, like, maybe is he going to be as, like, committed, or is he really the changed man he kind of purports to be? And
right,
they just don't want to be dealing with issues and embarrassments.
100%. And with Lane, and we've made this point, I'm sure you've made this point, everybody knows this, but when it comes to personality, I'm going to say what I'm thinking, say what I feel, not give you the coach speak answers. When it comes to scheme, when it comes to offensive philosophy, all of that just seems like such a perfect match for the University of Florida. And, you know, you're not hiring a guy to be here 10, 15 years anymore. But if you're looking at a guy that at Ole Miss in 6 years has had unprecedented success at that school, I just think that's the guy that the fan base is pretty clearly ready for. And in 2025, I don't think that there's another candidate, even Cignetti, who I would be excited about, even Freeman, who I would be excited about. I think that that Kiffin stands above all the rest when it comes to candidates and guys on the list for who we're going to hire next year.
Yeah.
And what's made Florida Florida is spreading the ball out and scoring a lot of points. And that's what Lane Kiffin does, and that's who we need in Gainesville.
Hey, by the way, don't bag on Johnny Vaught too much, Vaught Hemingway. I mean, he won a national title and like 6 SEC titles. So
yeah,
at Ole Miss.
That was pre-integration. I mean,
but it was pre a lot of stuff. But I'm just messing with you. But no, Lane has done phenomenally. I think he's the no-brainer. I hope that that's where they go if this thing doesn't work out, and I don't think it's going to, and it's not. But it's not over yet.
Well, Edgar, I know you're a busy man, and we'll get you out after this segment. But every guest leading up to game time, score prediction for Saturday night in College Station, what do you got?
We pick it for the paper now. I have a new editor, and he likes doing that. I picked it 23-17 A&M. I think
that covers the spread, doesn't it? Or is that?
It's 7.5. I just think Marcel Reed, man, I was very impressed with him last year. He got pinned early down by the goal line last year and made a really nifty run to kind of get things going for them last year. He was very good here. He's got incredible receivers. He's not very accurate. I mean, he's under 60%, just a tad. But his receivers are excellent, and they're transfer guys. And their offensive line's good. They got a good backfield, man. He's going to be hard to like contain. But I think they're going to do a pretty good job, and I think they'll score some points. I think DJ's kind of found himself, but I don't know. I mean, what do I know? I mean, I was 21-7 my first 4 weeks picking games against the spread, but I backed up to 3-4 2 weeks ago. So I'm during the bye week. I was ready to open a DraftKings account. What do you guys have? Or do you not do that?
No, we do. We do.
I picked us to go 12-0 at the beginning of the season.
I've heard that.
I kept
thinking you were joking. You weren't joking?
Well, it was originally 10-2, but then they were calling out my loyalty, so I switched it to 12-0, and then it seemed really good after the LIU game, and before we had kicked a field goal against USF and we had handed it to Jaden Bond, he ran for like 40 yards.
Oh, yeah.
I thought we might be on the way to 12-0, and then we just inexplicably stopped giving him the ball. So,
all right, Will, what do you got for the score Saturday?
I think the Gators are going to pull this one out. Billy Napier, nobody's better with his back against the wall. I see some sort of – I think I keep talking about it, but when our defense is good and their defense is good and it's a race to who can get to 20 points first, I like Lagway and guys like Dallas Wilson to be able to score on a big play, and I think our defense is going to keep us in the game. And even if, you know, we get down 10-0, 13-0. As long as you keep it within two scores, the Gators got a shot to come back and win this thing. And so I think Billy is finally, at some point he has to win a game against a 500 team on the road. That would just be unbelievable if he did it. Does he? So I think I'm picking it this week.
Yeah, I got us losing a game that's somewhere in between the LSU game and Miami game, you know, like 23-14. I have to see it before I'll pick it. I've gone on the record picking Florida every game this year. It's just I think that they have a valiant effort with the defense, and it's just it's going to be a lot like every other game that we've watched this year. Some of the breaks don't go our way. You have very little margin for error in the style of football that we play. We make a couple errors on the road in front of 110,000 people, screaming yells or whatever they call their cheers out there, and we aren't perfect.
I'm with Devin. Almost a exact score. I got 24-13, and for the same reasons. I think it's one of those games we'll get to halftime, we'll say, man, if this happened or that happened, we'd have the lead, but, you know, we're still in it, and then they just slowly kind of creep away, and the offense isn't able to get it done. I hope I'm wrong. I hope they pull it out, but not as optimistic as William.
Nobody ever is.
Yeah, I've got 20-13. You know, Will says he's got to win a big top 25 road game. Maybe he can do that coaching high school ball next year against a Max Preps top 25 team, but he will never do that at the University of Florida. So I got him going 0-13, I guess, against ranked opponents on the road.
Yeah, so Will talks out of both sides of his mouth, I'm starting to realize.
Yeah.
You Edgar. Welcome, Edgar. Welcome.
My dad's been telling me this for almost 30 years.
No, but I'll say this, that I would not be stunned if they do win, but I think it would be fun to see, just to kind of like keep the narrative kind of going and keep things interesting. But a lot of people, I can see Jackson, a lot of people are just ready for this to like come to its, you know, inevitable conclusion. And this would be a big step toward that, because then he's got no margin for error at that point. The next loss probably is the end.
Yeah,
that's,
I agree.
Kind of well, as well.
Well, we appreciate it, Edgar. Thank you for joining us tonight, talking some Gator football. And you and I will continue to text throughout the week as you travel to College Station. So safe travels and enjoy the Texas barbecue. And we'll see if your score prediction's right Saturday night.
Thanks, fellas.
Thanks, Edgar. Thanks, this is
Edgar.
Awesome.
Thanks, Edgar.
See you, man.
All right. Well, that was Edgar Thompson with the Orlando Sentinel joining us. You can follow him at OS Gators on Twitter. You can find his podcast, Swamp Things, on Apple and Spotify. He does that show with Mark Long of the Associated Press. Very good podcast. Very informative. And that was a good episode, fellas. He was very insightful. He gave us his list. He's all aboard the Lane train, just like we are. I'll start with you, Dev. What kind of stuck out throughout our conversation with Edgar?
Yeah, Breakfast Bites is going to be breakfast buffet this morning. I really enjoyed getting to hear from Edgar. I thought that some of his insights on his conversation with Blagwell was really interesting. He scared me a little bit there early with what he was kind of describing the path to Billy keeping his job, which is always something that makes me uneasy. I know it makes Hunter and yourself and Sam uneasy too. Will has seen the path since August. So we're on opposite sides of the aisle on that one, but we'll persist either way. So I really enjoy talking to Edgar. It's awesome. We'll have to get him back on hopefully after we're midway through this coaching search.
Yeah, I appreciate that he listens to the show. Avid listener, so I shoot him the link every week. And glad to have him on and get his insight. And I thought it was unique. We talk about how Napier doesn't really ever die. And him going up to, I forgot, somewhere, you know, 85 miles northwest of Atlanta, talking about his upbringing, it's all good stories, right? Like, I get it, good guy, but you're making almost $8 million a year at the University of Florida. I'm over that narrative, you know. It's time to win a ball game. Sam, what do you got? I know you missed our episode, but
yeah, hi guys.
Behavior in this team not quitting.
Well, that sounds like I missed a lot.
You did. You missed a one-on-one show with Will. Will and Edgar.
I came on. I was confused. I thought Jackson and Devin were just watching like me. It was just Will and Edgar.
That's
Edgar was asking me to rant, and he got me going.
That's the showdown Gator Twitter has been just dying to see. Will.
I don't think I've tweeted anything negative at Edgar in years.
Shocker. So. Well, he jumps on and
Will kicked him off.
Yeah. I will say one of the interesting things that Edgar said was him and Mark Long's segment about unsubstantiated rumors. You know, there's got to be a little more to the unsubstantiated, air quotes, probably unsubstantiated. So I think he knows some things.
If you showed up to the tailgate Saturday like the rest of these guys, you would have heard that.
I might have.
Several days ago.
That's why I had to ask him on the pod. I needed to get him on record.
If anybody has any unsubstantiated rumors, our DMs are open for them.
I was just going to say, when you see different articles, like the one that dropped, was it this morning or yesterday, the Brett McMurphy, you see that one, and then you hear stuff a few weeks ago. You just got to let it play out. You're going to hear things on both sides, right? You're going to hear the, we're here and he's staying. You just got to win this game or that game. Oh, we're here and he's gone no matter what after this loss. Like, it's all talk. It's all talk. You just got to let it play out and whatever happens, happens. I just think, people get caught up a lot in what they're hearing with this kind of stuff. The games will handle themselves one way or another.
With this guy, I won't believe it until there's a literal press release. I won't even believe the Pete Thamel tweet. Like, I'm gonna need the actual press release, because I won't. It just won't happen.
The vision of how this is gonna happen has come to me. It's going to be a close moral victory kind of game on Saturday night, where we'll see a lot of good, but they make one or two more plays. We lose a tight game in College Station. We're feeling good about. The staff's feeling good about how they've played for 2 weeks, and then it's homecoming, and they're playing against a team they out talent. They're wearing their throwback uniforms. They see Jeff Lebby on the other sideline. They see the Mississippi State logo on their helmets, and then all of a sudden you look up and it's the fourth quarter. It's 20-17. We've just thrown an interception. We've just fumbled a ball that we shouldn't have fumbled. Trace Mack missed a field goal, and October 19th, we're finally ending this nightmare. I hope we don't lose. Obviously, that's just the vision that I have for how this train wreck ends. He's got his three bottom tier SEC losses in the bank already. Vandy, Kentucky, and Arkansas. It's just right to get the fourth ring and that finally be the end. History repeats itself. Losing to Mississippi State and that finally being the final nail in the coffin.
Well, if history repeats itself, are we going to keep him on for the rest of the year and knock Florida State out of the playoffs after they went out?
As long as I don't have to have any reservations about going into Jacksonville, and if our talent that is on this roster overcomes the coaching on the sidelines that we might have to see him again next year, then I don't care if he's coaches the rest of the year. I just want to know that he's not going to be here so I can go into Jacksonville and not have that in the back of my head to worry about.
You want to be able to go into Jacksonville and tell all the Georgia fans, just name drop names and see how they react. Just go into their little tailgate, some whisper Lane Kiffin, and see if they start to shiver.
Yeah, they will.
Sam, you have a score prediction? We gave ours with Edgar right there. What do you got this weekend?
I'll keep it close and hopefully I don't drop. I think we'll keep it close until the third quarter, and then A&M will pull away. I do think they beat us by double digits because I've said they're a good team, and I also have some other agendas to push. Give me 31-17 Aggies.
It's just hard to believe that this defense can allow 31 points unless the offense just shoots themselves in the foot.
I said defense will keep it close in the third quarter, and then some Billy stuff might happen, some fourth down calls, this, that, and it's just
maybe our six-star long snapper, throws one into the end zone and they jump on it, something like that, Sam.
No, I'm thinking far worse.
Some of the
I'll leave that to Gator fans' imagination, which can be very wide with what we've seen from this head coach.
Some of the underlying stats with our defense kind of point to that they're playing above water right now, a little bit better than what those underlying stats might say. So hopefully that doesn't regress itself to the mean. If it does, then this could be a game where A&M gets up into the 30s, and I don't think that we have the offensive firepower to keep up with them.
Maybe 31 was being not fair to the defense. I do think it will be double digits, so maybe I'll retract and go like 27 to 13.
We could hit the 29 mark, Sam. You know, the Billy Napier special of winning a big game at home. Maybe that's what Mike Elko does to us on Saturday night.
Ooh, this game just screams a Billy Napier sad field goal. I don't know why. They've been going around a little bit. I think we could see one of those.
As long as he keeps the shutout streak intact.
Oh, my gosh.
All we got going, baby.
That's all we've got. This guy's about to drop to 21 and 23.
I couldn't believe the stat in the McMurphy article that he's never been more than two games over 500 in 4 years.
Disgusting. Well, hell, he's never started 2-0.
Atrocious.
I think
that's 75 years to never have finished the season ranked. 75 years.
I think that article said that he started 11-9, and that was the highest over 500 that he had gotten, and then lost six straight games. And then he got back to – I want to say he got to 20 – what did he get to? 20-19 this year before he lost to South Florida?
Yep. 20-19.
God bless the guy, man.
Have some faith, fellas. I mean, I just picked us to lose, so I shouldn't say that. But, I mean, coming off a win, it is interesting listening to Gator Twitter and different people out there, podcasters like us. I mean, four or five of us just predicted A&M to win, right? But it's interesting. You come off a win like that, and a lot of the noise that you're still hearing is overwhelmingly negative, which I get why. I understand why. I'm just – It feels a little off, right? It feels a little odd.
Well, the coaching staff is still excited about the win from Saturday. It's Thursday morning. They might have turned on Texas A&M tape by now and turned the page to Texas A&M. Sunbelt Billy and the boys got us, man.
Let's shout out to one staff member, which two of our hosts have worked for, Coach P.
Coach P.
That's how you read a room, baby. That is how you tweet after a win when you know you're still 21 and 22 these last 4 years. So we'll give a shout out to old Coach P.
I'm not convinced that he wasn't actually just trolling me for flipping out at Jacob of France, but it doesn't matter because I love Coach P. He's the man.
That's why you got the hoodie on.
Exactly. Marcus and Coach P hooking it up with the hoodie.
Someone said that he was trying the Game of Thrones, the GM position.
Coach P, the little finger.
Yeah.
Well, fellas, any last thoughts before we wrap up? And we'll see you guys again Sunday morning.
It's always fun to talk Gator football.
Well, did any of you pick us to win?
Guess who?
You know who picked us to win.
Mr. 12-0.
You're going to doubt DeBilly?
He also has an agenda to push, Sam.
This also, I think this was the game that whenever I had originally picked us to go 10-2, this was one of the games that I had us losing, along with Miami.
I think all of us did.
But now I'm convinced we're going to win it.
So we're going to get this straight. You had him at 10-2, and this is a loss. And now after watching five games, you said, you know what? I've changed my mind. I think Texas A&M to win.
Well, yeah. See, Hunter, you see what happened was in the preseason, I thought we were national championship contenders. And then the first part of the season happened, but then we had the best bye week in the history of bye weeks. We beat Texas. And so some are calling this the mini bye week, you know? And so Texas A&M, let's do it.
Pretty soon we'll have the bye week.
Not too much
longer, right?
Hey, like Lovelace said, the season doesn't start till after your first bye week.
Preseason is over. We're 1-0 as far as I'm concerned.
All right. Well, guys, again, we're part of the Stadium and Gale Network, and we're brought to you by our good friends Norris and Norris PA out of Lake City, Florida. They're a preeminent law firm serving North Florida since 1985. You can give Guy a call at 386-752-7240 if you need any assistance with business law matters, real estate, wills, or trust and estate planning. And again, as always, please like, subscribe, follow us on Twitter at BreakfastWTG. You can also find our handle on YouTube. And we'll see you guys again Sunday morning following a road game at College Station. Go Gators.
Go Gators.
Go